Okay, we're beginning by the two dots on the top of Yutet Amud Aleph. So the Gemara here is continuing to explain the Mishnah, and it says, "V'lo nivrechet akubsim," but not the laundering pools. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avua, Loshanu elamina machmetzan. That's only true from the detergent pool. Aval mina nadyan dal ramot. But from the rinse pool, you need 4 amot. So the difference, as we noted in the Mishnah, the machmetzan is the pool that has the detergent or whatever they were using. Rashi here claims that they had soat kelavim, they're using dog feces, but something that they let the begadim, the clothing, soak in, along with the detergent, in order to cleanse it. After that process was done, they moved it over to the other pool, and the other pool was this rinsing pool that they seemingly squeezed or rubbed the clothing. They worked over the clothing after it had already been in the detergent. Then they do the spin cycle and the rinse cycle that they take care of in the other pool. So in the pool that has the detergent in it, there you only need the 3 tefachim that are mentioned in the Mishnah. But with regards to the rinse pool, you need 4 amot. And the reason being that there's a lot of splashing from that pool because of the fact that they're squeezing out or banging the clothing when they do the spin and rinse cycle in that other pool. And then the word would come from the word navnad. Like nadyan means to move or to spray around. And so because it shoots water out and sprays around, you need more distance between the rinse pool and the wall. You would have thought almost the other way around, intuitively. The detergent pool, which is more caustic, you'd want more space. But there it just sits and soaks. By the nadyan pool, where there's a lot of activity, the water splashes, so we need to give more distance, probably even to give room for them to work on the other side of the pool between the wall and the pool. In addition, there are others that suggest that it is like a laundering stone that was there, which they used to smash the begadim or stretch the begadim over when they were cleaning them. Similar to a washboard, but there they were using a stone. But either way, there's a lot of water splashing all over the place, and that's why you need more distance. Tanya Nami Hachi, we have a braita that supports that. Nivrechet akuvsim dalet amot. So it just says, stam, the pools of laundering have to be 4 amot away. Banan tnan. Our Mishnah says, gimot tvachim. The way to reconcile it is based on what we just saw from Nachman Amar Rabbi Avua, that you differentiate between which pool of the laundering. Some present it as a stira, and then with the solution coming from Nachman. Tznan, our Mishnah says, don't we have a bright that says 4 amot? Amar Nachman Amar Rabbi Avua, lokashim. Kan mina machmitzan, kan mina nadyan. So the solution to the problem is the distinction made by Rav Nachman. It's not a statement, but rather a way to solve the problem between the Braith and the Mishnah. He explicitly had it inside of his Mishnah or Braitha. Elim King Herchik Misfat Machmetzan Ulokotel Gimel Tfachim. So inside of his Mishnah Braitha, he had it spelled out. That when we're speaking our Mishnah, the Gimel Tfachim, it's talking about Sfat HaMachmetzan. From the edge of the detergent pool, that's what you need, the 3 tefachim. But the other pool, you would need larger space, you'd need the 4 amot. Now, besad besid, this is an issue that we already discussed in the Mishnah, because there's a girsa issue, which is ibailu, besad besitnan, odilma osad besitnan. Does it mean, and you put plaster on? Or does it mean, or you put plaster on? So the Mishnah indicates what the solution to these problems are. One solution is Achik Gimel Tfachim, is to move away 3 tfachim. Then afterwards it has Visad Besid. So yeah, you could read in one of two ways. Visad Besid could mean that in addition to the 3 tfachim, you need the Sid there in order to make it that it's not damaging. Or you could argue that there are two solutions being offered by the Mishnah, which is either 3 tfachim or Sad Besid. And that's what the Gemara is asking. The truth is, it should be obvious from the Mishnah which way it's written. If it's written Visad Besid, it means and. If it's Osad Besid, it would mean or. And the truth is that we have that problem in the Mishnah, which is that there is a Girsa. We're going to see in a second that Rashi thinks that that's the Girsa of the Mishnah later on, when it's talking about the Gefet, the Zevel, Melach, Sid, Vislaim, that is Osad Besid. That there it is, O. So now the question is, earlier on, when we're dealing with the items that we're talking about earlier in the Mishnah, is that Visad Besid or is that Osad Besid? Now, The question should be obviously answered if you think later on the Mishnah says Ov Sad Besid and over here it says Visad Besid, then it should be pretty obvious that that distinction means that there's a difference between the languages. So what the Ramban and others indicate is that the truth is that all it said in the Mishnah was Visad Besid. Vav can work or function in two ways. You can have a Vav that is a Chibur, that is an and you can have a Vav that is a Vav a Chibuk, which is an or. So even in the Torah, many times it has a list of items. Sometimes the list is dot, 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 and, or it's dot, 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 or. And the Vav is used in both cases. So the Vav can sometimes mean and sometimes mean or. And that's likely what the Gemara has a safek about over here. When it says visad besid, does that mean gemot vachim plus you must do this? Or is it gemot vachim visad besid, or sad besid is a sufficient way to deal with the issue? So the Gemara says over here, Pshita de besad besidnan. It definitely is and. Disakadatcha de osad besidnan. If you think it said or, imkein li arvinu velitnehu, then they should mix them together and put them in one block. So Gemara's answer, and what Rashi notes from here, as well as the Balei Tosafot, that the question is, the tarte bavi deresha umitziyota. The two sections of the resha, plus the middle piece, you would have to put them all together in one shot. Tahatam osad besidnan. Rashi says that in that last case, it's clear that the Mishnah says osad besid. So again, if you go back to the Mishnah, in parentheses, there was an O in the Mishnah. So Rashi is saying over here that it is clearly osad besid. That should be written there. And based on that, now the question of the Gemara is trying to conclude that above it must have been visad besid. Because otherwise, the Mishnah should have listed all of these items together and given one solution at the bottom, which was gimel tvachim osad besid. The fact that it separates them into different blocks is to indicate that there are differences between these items. That some of these items require an and some of these items only require an or. And so for that reason, they have osad besid later on, and up by us, it's visad besid. But again, on the Mishnah, Balei Tosafot on the spot, say Visad Besid, V'nira L'ri, to the Seifa Nami Garas Visad Besid. That even in the Seifa, it should say the Vav, and not O. Below Garas O. D'Garasinam B'Seifa O, Sad Besid, Imke Intu Shot Devrehem, Visad Besid Znan. Then it would be obvious that the first part of the Mishnah, when it says Visad Besid, that is and. So he's saying that even though the Mishnah or the Gemara is clear here, that the latter part of the Mishnah means O, that doesn't mean that the word O necessarily appeared in the Mishnah. Because again, that would make it obvious. If you have O in the Mishnah, and the first time it said V, that's in contrast. O versus V, it's clear there that the V would be an and. And therefore, he favors leaving the Girsa as Visad Besid, rather than switching it to Osad Besid, because that would make the answer here so obvious. It says, and why is it so obvious to the Gemara then, that the latter part of the Mishnah is not that Osad Besid? He says, because those items are either less caustic, or less problematic than the earlier items in the Mishnah. And therefore, the Gemara is clear that the latter part of the Mishnah is or. They just want to know in the first part of the Mishnah where those items are much more problematic, is that and or is that or? So that's the way to understand the Gemara's question. And now the Gemara says, Dilma Mishom Delo Domi Hai Hezeka Lahai Hezeka. Gemara says, wait a minute, maybe the difference is not because the Gemara didn't want to put them together because they were different. One was Visad Besid and one was Osad Besid. The reason the Mishnah didn't put them together is because the nature of the Hezek is different. Resha, Hezeka de Metunta, Seifa Hezeka de Havla. The Resha is a problem of moisture or dampness, whereas the Seifa is a problem of heat. And so the enumeration over here, the difference between the lists, is what caused them to separate them, not the halachic difference. Maybe they have the exact same halacha, but they still paired them together because of the nature of the damage that's done. The earlier items, as we mentioned when we read the Mishnah, the bor, the shiach, the me'ara, and amata mayim, nivrech, the kufsim, all of those are problems of moisture, as the Balei Tosafot said over there, that all of them were speaking about where there's water in them. Then you have the umar chikim, the gefet, zevel, melech, v'sid, v'taslaim, mikotlo, shel chaviro, shloshat vachim, osad v'sid, that's talking about issues of heat, where there's some sort of organic process that's going on that's generating heat. So the separation came from the need to separate between the type of hezek versus the difference in halacha. And so maybe your diuk is incorrect. The halacha is exactly the same, but they weren't combined because of the nature of the difference in the hezek that is done, rather than the halachic difference between them. Now what's interesting is that the Gemara yesterday spoke about the case of Machitim et Zraim et Machreshav et Megralayim min HaKotel Shloshat Tvachim. And the Gemara there wanted to make a diuk against Rava. And the Gemara says, no, HaKamashulan de Betunto Kashel HaKotel. Says, no, there it's trying to teach you that moisture is bad for the wall. It would turn out then that the way the Mishnah is structured according to the Gemara is the first list deals with dampness and moisture. The second list deals with heat. And then the third list deals with moisture again. But that moisture in the third case is only archaka of shlosha tefachim, but not sad besid. So you actually have moisture that is very problematic, maybe even pernicious. In that way, you need both three tefachim and sad besid. You have a second list, which is heat, where you need either three tefachim and sad besid. They have a last list of things that are also water or dampness, and there you only need three tefachims, because the dampness of the water we're speaking about is much less problematic than the first list. And again, as we noted yesterday, even the use of the word dampness in that third list is somewhat difficult because it's talking about plowing and it's talking about zera'im. And so it's a narrower usage of the word dampness over there. But nevertheless, the Gemara then speculates that you can't conclude anything from the fact that the halacha is brought in two different sections because the reason for that may just be topical and not halachic. Tashma, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Sela Haba B'Yadayim. So this again, this is something we saw 2 days ago, that when you have a Sela Haba B'Yadayim, which then we discussed the different possible interpretations of what Sela Haba B'Yadayim is, Rashi suggested over here that it was Karkarach. It's very soft ground, Mitkatesh Me'elav, and it crumbles by itself. On the other hand, we saw that the Rabbeinu Gershom over there suggested that it was Sela Haba B'Yadayim Islaim Amnuchim Ben Mitzrei Hasadot Siman VeHeker Mechitza Ben Zelazeh. They are rocks or bedrock that is there between the properties that are used to delineate the property line. They are placed there and they have this unique feature that Mitpotzeitz HaKarka. They cause the ground to break up or they cause the ground to, the literal word is explode over here, but they are not stable because they were put there by man. If they naturally are there, then it's fine. But if you bring in these slaim there, they either cause the land or they themselves break up or cause the land to break up. And therefore, these are, we call it difficult or problematic for any separation or wall that is there. So again, here, Rabbi Yehuda said about this item, Osela babi adayim zechofer boromikan, vzechofer mi boromikan, zemarchik gemot tvachim vesad besid, vzemarchik gemot tvachim vesad besid. So over there, he gives you the instructions, which are, you need three tvachim, plus vesad besid. So over there, you are separating from the problematic area, and you're leaving six tvachim between the two of you, which is the standard that we already discussed. But it says there that you're also vesad besid. Taima de babi yadayim. The reason their beauty requires that is because it's ba biyadayim. It's this unique type of stone or ground that is there. Halo ba biyadayim. If it was standard ground, lo, then you would think you don't need to do what is mentioned over here. What's mentioned over here is three tvachim plus vesad besid. Even though over here seems to the Gemara has no problem understanding that the vesad besid means and over here, even though the same thing is written in our Mishnah. Here it seems obvious to them that it means vesad besid. Where it says, Hu adin, davka abdullah baba yadayim nami sad besid. Now, Rabbi Yehuda's din is not coming to teach you hababa yadayim and not other things, but rather, ubaba yadayim it's trichle. It's coming to teach you something about baba yadayim. Sakadat chamina became the baba yadayim li bai raf chotfei. I would have thought that since this is a problematic type of ground or earth or rocks, you would need more space than your standard space. Kamash Milan, that a standard space and a standard protocol is sufficient over here. So Yehuda's Chiddush is not this and not anything else. It's saying everything else, this is like everything else. Because the fact that it, even though it has these unique properties, we still don't demand that you do more separating or more than a normal case. So again, here we can't prove anything from here with regards to what our Mishnah is saying. And therefore the Gemara is inconclusive as to whether the Besad Besid means and, or beside the sid means, or, in the first part of the Mishnah. Okay, marchikim et a gefet, vet a zevel, vet a melach, vet a slaim. It's not hatam. The Mishnah in Shabbat says, bameh tomnim, ubameh ein tomnim. Mishnah asks, what are you allowed to put items, bury items into before Shabbat? And what are you not allowed to bury items into? Part of the cooking process on Shabbat involves three different concepts that we bump into on Shabbat, and that is Shihya, Chazara, and Hatmana. So Shihya is leaving things on the fire or on the stove going into Shabbat. Achzara, or Chazara, is taking things and putting them back on the fire on Shabbat. Tomnim is things that you insulate, bury in the ground before Shabbat. Over there, there's a distinction that's made in the Mishnah, which is items that are not mosif hevel, items that simply insulate but do not increase the heat, that you can do before Shabbat. You can be tomein, you can bury something completely inside of that, and it's fine for Shabbat. On the other hand, if it is an item that is mosif hevel, that means that the item actually increases the heat of whatever you put inside of it, either because the item itself has its own heat source, like we've noted, the items that we mentioned here all have organic processes that are going on that increase and reach certain levels of heat or produce heat themselves because of the chemical reactions, or because of the, some want to state that even if the insulation itself causes an increase in the heat level in there, that that's also called mosif hevel. Over there, we don't let you bury things going into Shabbat in something that is mosif hevel. Most likely, the Gemara says, because Shema Yatmin Beremetz. We're afraid that he would then bury it inside of remetz, which are either coals or ashes that are live. And then we're afraid you'll come and stoke those items because you've buried them inside of something that has a heat source to it and can be stoked. And we're afraid you're going to stoke it and then you'll be cooking on Shabbat. So for that reason, they prevented, or there was a gzera put in place that ein tomnim bedavarim shemosif hevel. You can't do hatmana to items that are mosif hevel. It actually comes up a little bit today. Some people have a practice either on their blech or over their cholent to put a cover on top of it or something to maintain the heat. The problem there is that that could be mosif hevel. If you put something that covers them, the blech or the crock pot is a source of heat, increasing heat, so it's mostly pevel. And if you surround it now on all sides, then you have hatmana, which is mostly pevel. So there are ways to get around it. If you leave one side open, hatmana has to be from all sides, but it is an issue that comes up, strangely, not the way that they envisioned it, but because of the way that people cover to keep items hot. They cover the blech or they cover the crock pot. So the crock pot might be problematic just to cover the top, because if you believe that the outer walls of the crock pot from the bottom and the side are already insulating it, then if you just cover the top, now you've created a hatmana because now it's covered on all four sides. Now the Mishnah says there, betomim entomnim, entomnim. Here are the items that are mosif hevel. It's going to have a very high similarity to our Mishnah, which is lobigefet. Not with the leftovers of the pressed olives, lo bezevel, not the fertilizer, velo bemelach, salt, velo besid, or lime, velo bechol, which does not appear in our Mishnah, not sand, ben lachim, ben yeveshim, whether they are dry or they are moist. And the Mishnah over there goes on to describe that there are certain items that are mosif hevel only when they are moist, but now when they're dry, some of them work either way, whether they're moist or dry. Mishnah hocha. In our Mishnah, the list that is enumerated, diktani slayim, it includes stones or rocks in it, velotani chol, but our Mishnah does not have sand. Well, Mishnah hotam, in the Gemara in Shabbat, diktani chol, sand is in the list, velotani slayim, but the rocks or the stones are not in the list. So you have here a list in one Mishnah that leaves out one item, and a list in the other Mishnah that leaves out another item. Why is there a difference between the lists here and the lists there? Especially since we just noted that the problem with these items is havla, is the fact that they heat up. So that's exactly the same reason they're problematic over here is the reason they're problematic over there. So I'm going to say the fish in darkam shubnei adam latzmin bislaim. That's not a normal material in which people are matzmin. Stones are not a good insulator in the sense that you can't wrap them directly around the pot. And we'll see in a second why there might be other reasons why you wouldn't want to use stones. Possibly also because you can't get them close enough together so the heat escapes. There are reasons to believe that slayim are not a good item to bu hatmana inside of. Says, wait a minute. How do you think that whether normal usage is the determination as to whether it's listed or not? He says, that's just not true. People don't normally do hatmana in gizei tzemer, the searings of the wool, or l'shonot shel argaman. Now l'shonot shel argaman really mean tongues of argaman, Argaman is a color. And it's a color that was used in royalty. We see that at any time they, like Megillat Esther is a good example of that. But it's one of the colors that was associated with royalty and was expensive to get, the argaman. And what they would do was, after they had dyed the argaman, the wool argaman, they used to hang it up on lines and then comb it, beat it, and comb it again so that it started to have a look like a tongue. It was an extended piece. And that's why it's called Lishonot Shel Argaman. Again, the reason you wouldn't use this is because it's extremely expensive and nobody would use an item like this to do hatman in it. Despite that fact, Tanya, tomnim begizei tzemer ubitzipei tzemer ubelishonot shel argaman ubemuchin ve'emitaltelin utam. You're allowed to do hatmana in all of these items, but you're not allowed to pick them up. The items are all muksa. Some of them are muksa because they are too expensive. Machmat chisaron kis, that's the lishonot shel argaman that we just spoke about. Some of them are muksa because they're in a state in which people would not use them on Shabbat, and they're mekatzei atam in adat because they're in the state of processing by which you wouldn't use them. And others are just because they're used for items that are generally muksa on Shabbat. So all of these items are muksa for different reasons, not all the same reason. But nevertheless, you can be matmin. You can do atmana with them. And what Abaye is pointing out is that despite the fact that these are unusual items to do atmana with, nevertheless, they're still listed in the Braita. So just because it's unusual, it doesn't give you an exemption from being listed in the Mishnah, because we have a Braita that lists all of these items, despite the fact that they're far-fetched, that people would use these items. Now, the items that are mentioned here, one was tzipet semer, which is after they've been combed and beaten, that's wool. The Rabbeinu Gershom over here says that these are bundles of wool. Tzipei tzemer, zehu tzemer saruk umluban letzorach tzvi'a. That is wool that is already combed and washed, but not yet dyed. V'yeshomrim, tzipei tzemer, krichot tzemer gadol. They're large bundles of wool. Kederach shemivina socharim imidinatam. The way that merchants bring them from their long trips or from where they're coming from. Muchin are shchakei bigadim. Those are worn down pieces of clothing that the sorek motzim mibigdei tzemer bekotzim. And the way that you do that is you take a sharp comb or something and you run it along the wool beged and it catches or takes out the pieces that are loose in the beged. And then you had here, the other items were straightforward, which are gizei tzemer, which are the shearings themselves. But again, Abaye's point is that even unusual items are listed, and so too, slayim should not get an exemption just because they're an unusual item. Elam Abaye, Yigid Alav Re'o. His friend will tell about him. Meaning, Tana Hacha Slayim, V'adin L'cho. Our Mishnah wrote all these items and left out Cho, but that'll be filled in by the Mishnah in Shabbat. Tana Hatam Cho. Over there, it wrote Cho in the Mishnah in Shabbat, and it left out Slayim, but that'll be covered by our Mishnah over here, V'adin L'slayim. Amalei Rava. Rava says, wait a minute, that's not the way you do Yagid Alav Re'o. I mean, if you want to say that the one Mishnah fills in the what's missing in the other Mishnah, the way you would do that is, Yagid Alav Re'o, Litneinu L'kulu B'chado. One Mishnah should contain the entire list, the comprehensive list. V'Litneichado Minai Obidach. And the other Mishnah should just list one and basically be etc. That's the way that you would be Yagid Alav Re'o. If you wanted to say, oh, these are the same, you have a comprehensive list in one, and then one item or two items mention the other one, then you would know, say, go look over there, and you know the rest of the list. But that's not the case here. In the case here, it's the full list, except one in each side. The reason over there is, because they are problematic for the pot. The word mishtache is very difficult to understand over here. And you can see, first of all, Rashi already brings two interpretations as to what the meaning of the word is. The first one he says is, that they are problematic because they break the kderot. The kderot are made out of cheres, they are pottery. And if you put them down on the stones, either maybe because of the heat of the stones or because the stones are just hard, then they break the kelim. Tachshamati, he says. But he says, b'chol makom, the problem is everywhere else in Shas, when they use the word mishtache, it means chalada or chaluda. Chaluda usually means rust, but in this context, I'm not sure that that's the case. It could mean that they're talking about stones with a metallic content to them and they rust. But more likely, what chaluda means is that it weakens or it breaks apart. And that's what it means over here. Just like rust causes the thing to deteriorate, weaken, break apart. So over here, mishtache la kdera, it causes the kdera either to break down or it causes the weakening of the Kedera. So that's the way Rashi brings those interpretations. The Balei Tosafot jumps on a bandwagon and says he brings what Rashi brings. And then he says, V'yesh lamar, el havi baile meymar, dein derech latmin b'slaim, l'fisha hevel yotzim b'ben aslaim. Says that these stones are not a good insulator, a good thing for Hatmana, because they're just not packed tightly enough, and therefore the heat escapes. Ve'enu mitkayim, v'afal pikayim, l'famim tomnim b'hem. Sometimes they use them. And the Haki Parech Shapir Migizei Tzemer. And that's why it asks from Gizei Tzemer, because those are items that are not usually used. Despite the fact that it's not usual to use them, you still sometimes use them. And that's the question that's being brought. But now, the Gemara is saying, that they're not used at all. The first assumption was that they're not used frequently because they're not a great insulator because of the gapping. And that's why we brought the question from those other items that are not used all the time. Now the Gemara moves on to the next stage where Rava is saying you don't use them whatsoever. Why don't we use them whatsoever? Because they break the kli. Since they break the kli, we're not going to touch them. He also wants to say, since it's not used at all, then it's mutar lahatmin bam. You can use them for hatmana, because whenever we have a gzera of the gzera of chachamim is only the milta de shchicha, on things that are normal, things that are frequently occurring. They don't put in gzerot for far-fetched or these unusual cases. And therefore, once you make the item so far-fetched or outside of the normal realm, it's not incorporated or encompassed in the gzera. So then in that case, you could use it. De lo shchicha lo gazru barabanam. He says, our minhag is, we use these rocks that cause heat or have heat emanate from them, and we use them for hatmana. How is it that we're using them for hatmana? His suggestion is the reason we're using them is because they were not incorporated under the gzeira. Because people didn't normally use them, and therefore they're not listed in the Mishnah, or simply the gzeira didn't even cover these items because they're not used. Mikomakom kasha, the problem is what Rashi said, that the word mishtache normally doesn't mean to break the kli, it means to chaluda, to weaken it, or to rust. And therefore now he brings other alternatives. He says, mefarish Rabbeinu Tam, b'inyan acher de mishtache, the hevel shalahem mikalkel ha-machal. Their heat ruins the food. The type of heat that emanates from them is negative for the food items that are contained in there, and that's why they don't use them. Well, the nidiri nira. And the Ri says, like the Rabbeinu Chananel, damar shalach hachikam v'shum mishtache, shemalkim et ha'aretz, umachlidin ota, umalin afar tichuach. The reason is that chaluda, but chaluda in the sense that they weaken the ground around them. They cause problems, not for the pot necessarily, but they cause problems for the ground that's there, and they weaken the area and it causes it to soften. And that's the problem over here. And he says that the Rav Mordechai Mevimi Araya Mirushalmi, that the Slaim that we're talking about over here is because they cause problems in the ground or they weaken or soften the ground around them. The Yerushalmi actually talks about Slaim, and we mentioned this by the Mishnah as well, that it seems like they think the Slaim here are not stones, but sella in the same sense of a coin. And therefore, they think the whole discussion here is totally different, that they're talking about using coins or metal. So that's the answer that's given over here, that the reason that the Slaim are left out of that Mishnah is because of Mishtache, and all the different definitions we just saw, of what that could be, breaks the Kdeira, it causes weakness or rusting in the Kdeira, or that it is ruins the food, all the different reasons. Hacha, Ainu Taima Delok Tani Chol. Over here, by our Mishnah, why does it leave out sand? Mishum, Demechamimi, Chaim, Umikrire, Korir. That is because sand has this unique feature. Some say it this way. Now, Rashi does not say it this way. And I'm not sure that this necessarily is the right answer, which is that it's a good insulator. Meaning that if you put something hot in it, it works with the heat. You put something cold in it, it maintains the coolness. I mean, sand works as an insulator in either direction. The problem with saying that is that there, they're using sand as an example of something that's mostly hevel. So you'd have to argue not only is it simply a good insulator, but it's an insulator that actually increases the heat inside of there. So you could argue that, but that would be the basic distinction over here. Sand over there is a problem because of the fact that you have something hot inside of it. Over here, where you're putting sand next to the wall, then there's no issue of the sand because the sand's not going to be hot. It's not insulating anything. It's not going to get hot. On the other hand, Rashi speaks about over here the difference between mechamei chayim kishnot nimbo davar cham Hu mitchamem. Gabi atmana machmimehu. Abagbag kotel karir. Rashi says that when you externally heat the sand, or you somehow heat the sand, over there, that causes the sand then to increase heat. Meaning that if it's in the sun, or something that beats on the sand, that causes the sand to increase the heat level, and that's why it's problematic by atmana. Over here, where you're putting it down next to the wall, there's no heat source that's there. And there's no heat source, it's not going to be a problem for the wall. So it says, Ratani Rabbi Hoshaya Chol. So didn't Rabbi Hoshaya, in his Braita, have Chol mentioned? It says, Hotam Bibituna. Tana Didan. So there, over there, it's mentioned not in the list of items that are Mosif Hevel. But rather, in Rabbi Hoshaya's list, it's in our Mishnah in the items that are damp or cause problems because of water. So Tana Didan Nami Litne. So then, okay, our Tana didn't include it in the Hevel list, but at least included in the earlier list in the Mishnah that deals with dampness or moisture. But look, my Mituna, Hatanalei, because the Mishnah already got Amata Mayim. The Gemara says, wait a minute, the Mishnah already covered these types of items. It has a water channel. What else do you need? Ato Milik Tani Amata Mayim Biktani Nivrech Kovsin. Oh, wait a minute. Even in the examples in the Mishnah, it gave multiple examples. It gave Bor Shiach Hemara, which he said over there, there was no Chiddush, because they're all one like grouping that always comes together. But then there was Nivrecha da Kufsin Amata Mayim. Why'd you have to give two examples there in the Mishnah if you only wanted to talk about dampness or moisture? Give one example and we'd have extrapolated from it. The fact that it listed both of them should also mean that it should list Chol, sand over here. It says, Hanu Tzriche, we need these two items. Deitan Amata Mayim Mishum de Kviya. By Amata Mayim, since it is something that is a fixture and permanent, but when it comes to laundering, it is not a permanent fixture. Emalo, we would not say that. Rashi says, what's the difference between a water channel and a laundering pool? He says, people change jobs. They don't always keep the same job. So maybe he was a launderer now, but he changes jobs and he's going to close down the laundering pools. Everybody, the Amata Mayim, a water channel, always needs to be there. They always need the water flow going through there. So Amata Mayim is something that's permanent. Nivrech da Kufsim is something that is maybe more temporary, not temporary in the sense of just days, but temporary in the sense that it won't be there forever. So that might be a difference that would have precipitated your thought that there should be a different halacha. Others suggest that Mishum Tegvia, or the Nivrech da Kufsim, is the source of water. The Amata Mayim has a flowing source of water, which is always there. The Nivrech da Kufsim is something where you have to fill the pools, or sometimes the pools dry out, so it's not always moist, it's not always damp over there. Ve'itana nivrecha dekupsim, but I only mentioned the laundering pools, mishum dekavu v'kaime, because they are standing water. They are gathered and standing water, they don't move. Of avatamayim, where it's just flowing water, I would thought that'd be different. Oh, thought there you don't need a distance tree, but if I need both of them to teach me, despite the unique features of each of these items, they still are problematic. But that means the reason they were listed is because they offer a chiddush. Chol, what chiddush is offering besides the fact that it's damp. And therefore, our author of our Mishnah felt there was no reason to add into Chol to the list in our Mishnah. All right, now we move along in the Mishnah. Marchakim et Zraim v'et Machresham. You have to distance the Zraim and the plow from the wall 3 tfachim. Zraim, tipuk le mishum machresha. Wait a minute. Why don't you just say you can't plant the Zraim there? Because you can't plow there. By definition, if you're going to put Zraim there, you're going to plow there. You need to plow there to put the seeds in originally. And if that's the case, then just say you can't do it because of plowing. Why do you need the Zraim afterwards? Umar says, b'mapolet yad, it's a case where they're hand seeding over there. They didn't plow it. Machresha, but typically mishum Zraim. So wait a minute. Why do you have to list machresha then? If you're talking about seeding over there, seeding should already incorporate machresha. Umar says, no. B'choresh li'inanot. In a case where he's plowing for the trees. So now, over here, you can segregate or separate the items. They're not synonymous. Zraim and Charisha can be manifest in different contexts. You can plow for a tree, so it has nothing to do with Zraim. Or you can plant Zraim without plowing. So since they're independent, each one independently is problematic. But typically, Mishum Mayo, why don't you just say that it's a problem because of watering? In those cases, you have to water the Zraim. That's going to cause the problem. Bringing water or dampness next to the wall is what's going to cause the problem, like we saw before. Bringing water is a problem. So why talk about Zraim? Just talk about watering them is a problem. Yeah. It says, Tana Beretz Yisrael Koi. The Mishnah is written in Eretz Yisrael. And someone lives in Eretz Yisrael, Dichtiv Nimtar Shemayim Tishtemayim. Depends on rain and not the watering of the crops. And therefore, there's a possibility that you have Zraim there that are not going to be watered. They're simply going to have rainwater that takes care of them. In that case, It's not the water that's the problem, it's the zera itself that is the problem. The memra. So the Gemara now suggests that zraim litzdadadim ka mishtarshu. From this you would conclude that zraim root to the sides. It seems to be what the problem is when you plow next to the wall. The reason that's problematic is because of the fact that you loosen the foundation earth that is around the wall that's giving it its integrity. By the zraim, you could have argued the same thing, which is that the planting of the zraim there and they're growing into the ground weakens the earth around it. But what the Gemara here is suggesting is the problem is the roots of the zraim, that the roots penetrate towards the wall and they undermine the wall when they grow, because the roots then, as Rashi uses the word over here, umachlidin, machmat mitachat kotel, they dig under and weaken under the kotel, umakalkulin yisodo, and then they ruin the foundation of the wall. So that's the assumption that these roots are now spreading to the side, and that is what is the problem. So Gemara says, Vatnan, is that really true that Zraim's roots spread to the side? We have a Mishnah in Kilayim. Mavrich et a gefen ba'aretz. A person who is mavrich. There are two words that are used in the Mishnayot over there in Kilayim. One is the word mavrich, and the other one is markiv. Markiv is to graft. That's when you take one tree or one vine and you put it into the other vine, tie them together, and they grow into each other. It's called grafting. The other word that is used over there is mavrich. So you can see the shorish of the word is berech, means a knee. And that is where you take a branch off of a vine, you reinsert that branch into the ground and bring it out in another location. So you have the original vine that's there. The original vine is rooted and has branches going all over the place, vines going all over the place. You take one of those vines that comes out, reinsert it into the ground and bring it up somewhere else. And your hope is that the part that is inserted into the ground will root, take root, and then you'll have an extension vine, we'll call it, or a new vine that grows over there. You might, in the end, sever it from the original vine because it'll have its own rooting and its own source of nourishment, or you might leave it connected to the original vine. These all have implications with regards to both Kilayim and Orla, and so on and so forth. So here, the Mishnah is speaking about a case of Mavrich. As Rashi notes over here, we're talking about a single vine over there, not a kerem. Because once you have a kerem, then you have to distance anything you plant a more significant distance away from a kerem because of kilaya kerem. If you're talking about a single vine, then the requirements of separation are much lower, or the thresholds of separation are much lower. So that's what we're talking about here. Mavrich de gevin baretz, im ein al gaba afar shloshat tfachim. If there is not sufficient earth above the vine that is pushed into the ground, meaning three tfachim worth of depth, lo yavi zera aleha. You may not plant something above it. B'tani Allah, and on that we have a qualification. Avol zoret et tzadim elach velech. You can just plant to the sides. So the fear here is there's going to be kilayim that comes out. If you plant it directly above the vine that is in the ground, you plant directly above and it's too close to it, you have a problem of kilayim. As soon as you move to the sides, you don't have a problem of kilayim. So what the Gemara is asking from here is, you're assuming that the roots are going straight down and not going to the sides. Because if they went to the sides, what does moving the zera to the sides do for you? They'll just go back towards where the vine is in the ground. That's the nature of the question of the Gemara. Tozavot over here starts to try to figure out what exactly is the problem of kilayim in this case. And that is, we've already seen this, that halachically, the main issue in terms of kilayim is separation, which is that they can't look bi'ir buvya. So that means that if you have a wall, we said you can plant a kerem on one side up to the wall, and you can plant tvuah to the other side of the wall, right up to the wall. Ah, beneath the wall, they might be mixing and the roots are mixing. We don't worry about that. The mixing of roots is not a problem by kilayim. It's simply that you have a division up top. That's number one. So in our case over here, what exactly are they worried about? That's what Tosfot asks. So you plant it on top and the roots go down together. Why is that an issue whatsoever? We saw already that roots getting together are not a problem. So you have to establish over here that one of two problems exists. Either the problem is that when you plant right over it, it looks bi'ir buvya, looks like it's mixed. Or you have to suggest that when you plant it here, there's something else happening that's different than simply the roots mixing. And that's what the Balei Tosafot over here suggests. It says, Mikol makom asur lizroa agabav, mipnei shehashoreshim nichnasim b'toch hagefen. V'avi kimarkiv zraim b'ilan dasur. He says that the reason or the problem over here is different than when you plant something on two sides of the wall. You plant on two sides of the wall, yes, the roots will mix down below. But that's fine. The problem is when the roots actually penetrate into the other roots. Which is that here, if you plant the zera right above this vine, and it's less than 3 tefachim, the roots of the zera will actually penetrate into the roots of the vine. That's called harkava, Tosfot says. It's not a problem anymore of simply kilayim, it becomes a problem of grafting. Kilayim of grafting. Then Tosfot runs into a little bit of a problem and says, wait a minute, if that's the case, why is it only true by a vine? A grapevine, it should be true by any tree that you do this. So then the Tosfot continues and says the Reish suggests that there's a core difference, that the roots of a grapevine are very soft versus roots of a normal tree. The roots of a normal tree are extremely hard, and therefore the zera doesn't have the ability to penetrate those roots. But the roots of a grapevine are softer, and therefore the roots of the zera have the ability to penetrate into them. So if you combine those two items, that is the problem that we are discussing over here, that the zera above the grapevine is penetrating into the roots of the grapevine because they are soft and that they are close to the surface. So that's what we're worried about, but we only worry about it again when it's directly above, not when it's to the sides. How far to the sides it has to be, again, the Baal Tosfot discusses over here, but he suggests it has to be a minimum of 3 tefachim away on the sides, otherwise it's a problem of your buvya on top. So he claims that that's how far away they've been put. But that's the case. The Gemara wants to know why over here is the zera problem when you put it up against the wall. Amar Rabbi Chaga b'shem Rabbi Yossi mipneishim machlidin et hakarka umalein afar tikoach. The problem is that they weaken the ground. When you plant the zera over there, they actually, instead of causing a problem by going under the foundation of the wall, they simply weaken the earth next to the wall. And by weakening the earth next to the wall, then they're going to cause a problem of integrity of the wall. It's an interesting phenomenon because in general we think that they have this problem in the plains and they have this problem now when they're building here and they have on the side of a mountain they put a lot of dirt or earth, that the only way to hold it in place is to actually grow things, that you put trees or you put plants there, otherwise the earth erodes and is washed away. So it's actually the other way around, that the roots of the trees hold the earth in place. But, on the other hand, they also do have an impact when you have a solid piece of ground, then when the roots penetrate into it and they go in there, they do cause a break up of the ground that's there, maybe even allow water to seep in, and they cause the ground or earth to soften in that area. So, they act in both ways. They both act as a stabilizer in the sense that they don't let the earth be washed away, but on the other hand, they weaken when you're dealing with very, very hard ground or solid ground. They do cause a weakening if that ground is, you're depending on that ground to hold something else up. And so that's what the Gemara suggests the problem is over here. Not that the roots are spreading to the side, but even when they go straight down, they're causing a problem to the integrity of the wall because of the earth that is supporting it next to the wall. Now the Ramban asks your question, that by the case of the wall, even though the roots mix below, they don't penetrate. They're too far away from each other, and therefore they don't penetrate. In order to penetrate, they have to be close enough whereby the roots itself actually get into the vine from the zera. The vine's roots will move around, but they won't enter into the roots of the zera because they're thinner roots. The problem is of the zera entering into the roots of the vine, and that only happens when they're close enough that they can do that. Once you have a wall separating them and it's to the sides, that's not going to happen. Here, where it's very close, and you have the soft roots, together they end up penetrating each other. You have to distance urine from the wall, 3 tefachim. Amar Rabba Bar Chana, mutar le'adam lashtin mayim b'tzad kotlo shel chavero. A person is allowed to urinate next to his friend's wall. That seems to go against what our Mishnah says. Dichtiv, because he says, v'chrati l'achav, mashtin bakir, v'tzur v'azuv b'Yisrael. So here's the pasuk when Eliyahu Navi comes to tell Achav after the problem with the Kerem Navot that he steals and his Yizevel ends up setting him up, getting him killed. Eliyahu comes and tells him that what they just did was beyond the pale and therefore he's going to be punished for this. And he's going to be punished by, this is it, Bichirati Achav. I'm going to wipe out any member of Achav's family, Mashtin Bakir, the ones who urinate on the wall. So now, what's being described over here is Mashtin Bakir, is who urinates on the wall. Only males, or Zecharim, urinate on the wall, because they urinate standing up. So Mashtin Bakir is either a veiled reference to Zecharim, or it could be a veiled reference to children, who don't care so much, or they are less worried about Tzniut, or going to the bathroom, that they're Mashtin Alakir. What it means is that he's going to wipe out every male member, every child from Achav's family, Batsur Bazub Israel. Some translated is referring to the property, that any public or private property that he owns will be taken away. Or others say atzur v'azuv means any member of the family, as far-fetched as they are, they will be wiped out. Achav will have no remnant in Klal Yisrael. Right after that, Achav rips his clothes and has some remorse and does some tshuva over here. And so Eliyahu says, because you were nichna, because you yourself did a little bit of tshuva over here, you won't die, but this will only happen to your descendants, but not to you. And that's what happens later on in Malachim Bet. V'anansnan, but what about our Mishnah? That Meir Aglaim in a Kota Shlosha Tvachim. You're not allowed to have urine by the Kota unless it's distance 3 Tvachim. He answers, Hatam B'shufchim. That's dealing with the dumping of a urinal. If someone has urine from a urinal that probably also is mixed with water, then when you dump that over there, that you have to do more than 3 tefachim away. On the other hand, if you're just urinating, then you don't have to move 3 tefachim away. Part of that, in some of the Rishonim, deals with how frequent that is. Meaning that if you're pouring shofchim there, it's something that maybe a person does more frequently, as if that's like a dumping area for shofchim, and that's the problem. And urinating is just something that happens once in a while that it happens. Right. So the problem with that is that twofold. One is that if you pour the shofchim there all the time, or if you urinate there all the time, it becomes a shirutim, becomes a bathroom. And then there are much higher thresholds of requirements of how far you need to distance a bathroom from the wall. So that distinction is probably less likely, but more along the lines, as Rashi says, that the shofchim de avit, you dump out the urinal over there, that's a lot of liquid. It's a lot of urine because it's collected, and now you're dumping it over there. That's a significant amount of liquid that takes time for it to dry up and has time to be problematic and penetrate. As a person just urinates, it's just one urination, and that's it. And then it can dry up much faster. That's probably the difference that's being noted over here. Tashma. Tashma, either lo yashtin or lo yatil, adamayim, they both mean the same thing. Do not urinate. Betzad kotosho chaviro, next to your friend's wall. Elim ken yirchik mimenu gimel tfachim, unless you leave a distance of 3 tfachim. V'medrei mamurim bekota levenim. That's true by a wall that is made out of bricks. Aval bekota levenim, b'kadesh liyazik. By a wall that's made out of stones, then you just have to do it so it doesn't damage. V'kama, how much is that? Tefach. You have to leave a tefach's distance. V'shtsunama, it's made out of bedrock. Mutar, then you can urinate on it. Tiyufta, the Rabbah Bar Chanana, tuviyufta. It's very clear here that this is a big problem for Rabbah Bar Chanana, because here, it's clear that we're talking about urination, and here it's giving you different thresholds about how far you need to be away from the wall. And it's clear here that only on bedrock are you allowed to urinate directly on the wall, but otherwise you either have to leave a tefach or 3 tefachim, and that goes against what Rabbah Bar Chanana said before, which is, mutar la'adam la'shtin mayim b'tzad kotlo shel chaveiro. So first of all, he didn't qualify it. Because you could argue, wait, he meant a bedrock wall. He's an Amora. An Amora has to qualify his statements completely. If he didn't say that, we're going to assume he means any wall. So if he means any wall, that's a problem for what is stated over here, because here it says only bedrock can you do it, not other walls. In addition, he darshans it from the Pasuk, which is Mashtim Bikir, which makes no such distinction. And since he makes no distinction, then this Braita is extremely problematic for him. Va Rabba Barachana Krok Amar. Wait a minute. Rabbi Rechana just didn't make this up. He's using a pasuk to support his position. That the pasuk says mashtin bekir means that it's describing people as mashtin bekir. That means that it's something that was normally done. If that's the case, he has a good proof. Where it says, hotam halchikamar. This is what it means over there in the pasuk. Afilu midei de darkei lishtunuye bekir lo shaviknele. Even individuals, I'm going to call loosely individuals, who normally urinate on the wall, I won't leave a remnant of them. My nihu, what is that? Kalbo. That is a dog. So what he's saying is that not only will the people in his family be wiped out, even the animals in his family or that belong to his family will be wiped out. And that Mashtim Bekir is the dog that normally urinates in this manner. That's what it's referencing to in the Pasuk. It's not referencing to people. Once you do that, you don't have the proof that Rabbi Barba Chano was looking for. I'm wondering if the Gemara is playing on where eventually Yehu comes and actually does carry out the Nevuah of Eliyahu when he overthrows the dynasty of Achav, as well as the fact that the Nevuah of Eliyahu also involves dogs. As Eliyahu says over there, V'dibarte elav lemor, Komar Hashem, arachatzta v'gam yarashta, V'dibarte elav lemor, Ko amar Hashem, bimkom eshel lakaku haklavim et dam navot, yaloku haklavim et dam echo gamata. And then he continues again after the pasuk that we quote over here by Mashtim Bekir, and it says about Izebel, v'gam Izebel diber Hashem leimor klavim yochlu et Izebel b'chel Yisrael. And after that, amei da'achav ba'ir yochlu ha'klavim, v'amei basadeh yochlu ofot shemayim. So again, recurring over and over again, the kelev is a major part of this nevuah of Eliyahu Navi. And that's what Yehu quotes after he kills Izebel later on in Melachim Bet. He says exactly that, that the nevuah of Eliyahu came true about the dogs eating Izebel. So you see the dog is a prominent character feature in the nevuah, and that might have swayed the Chazal over here to say that the Mashtin Bekir is referencing to the Kelev. It might be that the Gemara is playing on the fact that the dogs show up numerous times, that the dogs are going to lick up the blood, and that the dogs are going to eat the carcass. The theme of dogs is recurring, and maybe that's why the Gemara heads in that direction. Amar Rav Tumi Bar Kis, Namar Shmuel. Rakik, Enu Memeit B'Chalom. This is as if you were riding on a train, and the train jumped tracks. Because all of a sudden over here, you're dealing with Tuma and Ohalot. Nothing seemingly to do with our Gemara. At the tail end of it, it has some connection to us. But up front, it's something that seems totally disconnected from our Gemara and almost a non sequitur. A cracker does not reduce the size of a chalom. So now, when we're speaking over here, we're speaking about Tumat Ohalot. Tumat Ohalot is a case where you have a mate inside the Ohel. And we know that when a mate is inside the Ohel, anything that the Ohel is over becomes Tamei with Tumat Hamate. What happens if you have two adjoining houses with a wall between them? In that case, if the wall is completely solid and there's no way for the Tumat to move from one house to the other, it's contained within the house where the mate is. The house on the other side does not get the Tumat. On the other hand, if there's a hole between the walls, depending on what the size of that hole is, it will allow the Tumat to cross from one side to the other side. That's what the Gemara is speaking about here. A chalon, a window that goes through. The Bali and Tosafot over here speak about the different sizes of windows. Here, Rashi speaks about a puteach tefach, which is the standard size for a area that allows Tuma to pass, or the standard size for an ohel. But Tosafot, as he notes, that the Mishnayot in Olot depend on what the hole is for. If the hole is for light, if the hole is for utility, if the hole is for different reasons, then there are different requirements of size of what the hole is. Given whatever size you need for the Tumat to pass, if you have a rakik, if you have a cracker in there, it will reduce the amount of the size, and the Tumat will no longer pass through this hole. So it says, Ma'iriya rakik. Why does it have to be a thin cracker? Afilo aven ami. Even if it was thicker, I mean, it was a nice piece of cake, why wouldn't it do the same thing? So what is it about the cracker that is unique that wouldn't be true of a cake? So it's my lomi bayikamar. I'm saying not only lomi bayiaba, not only a thick piece of dough or cake, came in the chzile, since he sees it, lomi vatule. He does not give up hope of it, or he doesn't just leave it there and disregard it. Over a kik de mamis, when you're talking about a thin cracker that becomes dirty and disgusting, especially if water got on it, then person would reject it. Ema betuli mevatale. Maybe we should assume that he gave up hope of taking it out, and therefore it's batel, it's nullified. Once it's nullified or it's not important to him, it becomes a part of the building, and therefore it would reduce the space that's there. So that's what I would have thought, kamash malon, that that is not the case. Rashi explains over here, mitok shu dak, because it's thin, v'lichluach hakotel, and the moisture in the wall, martivo, wets it, then it is nim'as. So the factors that are important to the rakik is both its thinness as well as the moisture in the wall. The combination of the two make it that a person would not normally take it out because it's so disgusting. But what we're saying here is that's not the case. People are not mevatel the rakik or the aveh. We assume that they will remove that item from the hole. Since they will remove it in the future from the hole, then it's not considered to be nullified or part of the building. And so that's the key element over here. It's something that people would leave and nullify, and it's also something that they would not take out in the future. So now the Gemara says, "V'tipuklei d'abilei davar shu mekabel tuma." Why don't you just say it's something that's mekabel tuma? V'chol davar shu mekabel tuma inu chutzetz b'fnei tuma. Something can only be a barrier for tuma passing if it itself doesn't become tamei. But if it itself becomes tamei, it's no longer a barrier. So just say it's a food item. Food items become tamei, then the item's not blocking the hole because it is now tamei. It says, shinolosh b'mei peirot. It was needed in fruit juices. That is because in order for something food to be mekabel tuma, it needs to be mukshar the kabel tuma. It needs to be primed to accept the tuma. That only happens with yad shachat dam, the seven liquids that are considered liquids for being makshir the kabel tuma. Amongst those liquids are yayin, shemen, dvash, or chalav, or milk. But if you make the dough or the cracker out of any other fruit juice that's not in that list, then there is no hechsher the kabel tuma. So it won't be mekabel tuma because it's no shbevei peirot. Where it says, meitevei, is what you're saying really true? Kupam leya teven, v'chavit leya gurgurot. You have a basket full of straw, or you have a barrel that has full of gurgurot, pressed figs or dry figs. Hamunuchim bechalom. They're in the window. Same problem here. The question, are they blocking the window or blocking the tumah from going through? Ro'im koshi li natel. We look at it as if you took away the basket or you took away the chavit, v'yucholim teven gugurot la'mod b'fnei atzman, and the straw or the figs would stand on their own, they would remain there, chotzitzim. Then they're considered to be a chatzitza. V'im lav, in chotzitzim. If not, they're not chotzitz. So that seems to be a problem because here we're dealing with food items. And we're saying that the food items are mafsik. They do create a barrier over here. So how is that possible if they are mekabel tumah? They're ochel. Tosfot over here says, don't explain the reason why the chavit and the kupa are problematic. And you have to look at the food separately. Is because in the feresh detam mishum de sofo litol chavit vekupa. That in the end he's going to take the chavit and the kupa out, and that's what causes the problem. And that's why you need the food by itself to have. The food by itself to have the ability to stand by itself. Because the Ri says that kachu adin dechol davar chotzeitz bein and shiuchol la'amod b'fnei atzmo. That is an integral character to anything that's going to be a chotzeitz, is that it has to be able to stand on its own. And therefore you have to look at each independent item, whether it has the ability to be a chotzeitz, and not look at them in combination. In addition, Tosfot says, inami mishum dein and davar chotzeitz omeid ayidei davar sheinu mikabel tumah. That the chotzeitz here has to be something that stands without being mikabel tumah. And since the chavit or the kupa are going to become tamei, that can't be the item that holds together the davar chotzeitz. It's almost like we have by sukkah, that the ma'amid can't be something that's mekabel tuma. So to over here, the ma'amid can't be something that is mekabel tuma. Mar says, v'atevin chazi l'bamto, isn't straw feed for the animal? And that should make it ro'oi the kabel tuma. Mar says, bisario, where it is rotten or putrid. Again, this is something that actually goes on in the Gemara in Shabbat. At the end of the Gemara in Shabbat, also speaking about straw and the preparation of straw for the animals and whether it's muksa or not. And the Gemara goes through a similar sequence to what it says over here. All right, so even though the straw is saria, it's rotten, chazi latino, it is still good to be used for a mixture in cement. That's how they made the cement. That's what we just read in Mitzrayim, part of the Avodah, that they collect the straw in order to make the cement or the bricks that they're making. So straw is an important ingredient. So fine, it's putrid, so the animal's not going to eat it. It's not animal feed, but it's still ra'ui to be used because it is good for cement. If it is ra'ui to be used, not only so that the problem of being mekabel tuma might have gone away in some senses, but it's not mivutal. The person's going to take it out of there because he's going to utilize this straw. So there it's not going to be chotzeitz. It says, ditbek kotze. It has thorns in it. The problem with the thorns it is that the way they made the cement was they used to use their hands or their feet and walk on the straw or press the straw down. It's got thorns in it, it's not going to work. But as Mar says, chazidah soka, you can still use it as firewood. You can use it for kindling in the fire. So then you also would not be mevatel it. Mar says, bimetuna, it's still moist. So it's putrid, rotten, moist with thorns in it. Mar says, chazidah hesek gadol. So even if it's moist, you know that the way it works is that when you're starting the fire, you need to use dry wood. Once the fire is big enough, you can even put in moist wood because the fire is strong enough that can overcome the moisture. Where it says, Hesek gadol lo shchiach, a big fire like that in his house where he's going to use this moist type of straw, that's not a common occurrence, and therefore we'd assume he's going to leave it there. He's going to leave it there, and then it's going to be chotzeitz because it's not mekabel tuma, and he's not going to take it away. He's mevatel it to leave there. Grugorot. What about the grugorot, the dried figs? Again, hay chazuleh. Again, they're chazi for him, meaning that he could eat them, and therefore it should be a problem. Gemara says, Amar Shmuel, bishihit rifu. Rashi says, arehitliu. They became rotten, so he's not going to eat them. Chein tani Rabba Baravua, shihit rifu. And the same thing, Rabba Baravua says the same thing, that they're rotten over there. So now, over there you don't have to go any further, because once they're rotten or wormy, you're not going to use them for anything else, and he's just going to leave them there and be mevatel them there. Gemara says, hai chavit hechidami. Why exactly is it that we are saying that you have to ignore the chavit, or you have to ignore the basket and just look at what is inside? Why is the chavit or the basket itself not the chatzitza? Hechidamya, how is the chavit set up? Ida puma the bar, if its mouth is facing outward. Outward means towards the house that does not have the tumah in it. The house that has the tumah in it is the back or the base of the chavit is facing that way, and the mouth of the chavit is facing out towards the other house that doesn't have the tumah in it. He says, "He gufati chotz." Why do you need the food to be the chatzitza? Let the kli cheres itself be the chatzitza. Da kli cheres enu metamei migabo. One of the rules of earthenware utensils is that it's only mikabel tumah from the inside, not from the outside. So if the mouth is facing out and the back is facing, or the base is facing into the house, then it itself would be chotzeitz because it's not mikabel tumah. So Tosfot asks over here, just because the chavit is there, why is it chotzeitz if in the end he's going to take it out? If he's going to take it out, then why is it chotzeitz if he's not mevatel it? Rebar Mordechai suggests that the reason is because the stuff is so rotten inside that he's going to leave the kli along with the stuff that's rotten inside. The re is loath to accept that as being the reason. And rather he says that v'nir l'rbeinu tam or the re, the kli cheres lo bai bito. El eshapir chotzeitz afo bi demevatele. And when it comes to kli cheres or a kli, it is chotzeitz, even though you're not mevatel it. As long as it blocks up the entire hole, then the kli cheres can function as a chotzeitz, even if you're not going to be mevatel it. If it's simply taking up the airspace, and you want it to reduce the airspace, then you need a din of bittul. But if the kli itself is going to block the entire passage of that hole, then you don't need it to be mevutal in order for it to function. It says, Ela, the puma the gav. Must be that the mouth is facing inward, and there it's for its mikabel tumah. And if it's mikabel tumah, then that ruins it, because then it's not chotzeitz. Something that's tameh is not chotzeitz. Vibay teima, lolam the puma the bar. It's a case where it's facing out. So why isn't it chotzeitz? Hakamai skinan b'chavit shel matechet. You assumed that a chavit was a kli cheres, was an earthenware utensil. It might be that it is a metal utensil. Metal utensil can be mekamel tumah both from the mouth and from the base. Even if the base is facing into the house, matechet is mekamel tumah migabo. That's the case. It's tamei, and it's not chotzeitz because it is tamei. For that reason, the chavit is not useful in terms of creating the chatzitza. Therefore, you need the food inside of it to generate the chatzitza, something that you're going to leave there, something that is not either edible, or it's not something that you're going to use or take out of there. And it's only if it stands on its own. And the same thing is true by the basket, but the basket's easier to understand, because by the basket, in all likelihood, the tumah can penetrate. It's not something that's sealed. It's something that would be mikabel tumah. Tosfot does ask, then, if it is a kli matechet, why isn't the kli matechet, the metal kli, the thing that brings the tumah? Because it can function as a ohel, and function as an ohel, it'll bring the tumah from one side to the other side. So Tosfot either says that the metallic kli does not extend all the way into the other area, or the Rabbeinu Tam has this unusual understanding that it's wrapped by gugurot, that it has these dried figs or pressed figs that are wrapped around the entirety of the kli. Therefore, it's not functioning like a kli matechet in the sense of ohel, even though it itself will become tamei. That's why the Rabbeinu Tam says that it didn't pick any other food item, but rather grugurot. That's because only with grugurot could you plaster them all around the kli. But either way, Tosfot comes up to a way to have the kli matechet only be chotzeitz and not be the vehicle by which it moves the tumah into the other house. Okay, we're going to stop here. Four lines down on the top of Chof Amud Aleph.